Senate Committee on Higher Ed to order today, Wednesday, March 14th. And I apologize, we started a little bit late, but I understand there are still at least state and local government is still going in. It seems to be a very exciting committee today.
Just finished?
Yeah. Okay, they just finished, but there's several members that overlap, so we were trying to wait for them, but we have several bills on the agenda today, and since Senator Tomasoni was here promptly at 3 o'clock, we will start with Senator Tomasoni and Senate File 1799, so please join us at the table, and just identify yourself for the record and begin when you're ready.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Saxon.
You know, given the way the weather is right now, I think if you went out and looked on the front lawn, we might pick up a few more minutes.
Well, I am not going to suggest that any of the members here go out there because I'll never get you back, so you won't
Saxon,
come back in.
In school, you used to propose that we'd have class outside.
Is that a possibility, men? You know, I appreciate the attempt, Senator Koch, Senator Saxog. It's a good try, but I think we'll just stay right here since we finally got you here. So, and Senator Tomasoni is so excited to present his bill.
Oh, and Madam Chair, I was just noticing this is the Higher Ed Committee, but it sort of sounded like the early childhood there for a little bit.
Senator Tomasoni, it just shows you that I have no control over these people. They do whatever they'd like. And just to think, you left the committee and I lost even more control.
Well, and Madam Chair, I was just going to point that out, that my name is still in the green book, so do I still get a vote here if I have to today?
You know, we may have to invalidate everything, Senator Tomasoni, if you give that a try. But please, let us know about Senate File 1799.
Hey, thank you, Madam Chair. Senate File 1799 is a bill related to the Minerals Research Fund that is part of the Permanent University Fund at the University of Minnesota. And to give you a little bit of background on how this fund was actually initiated, back in about 1994, I believe it was, the funds were set up in such a way that royalties coming off of minerals research were going into two different funds. One was a scholarship fund for kids going to the all four campuses at the University of Minnesota, and the other fund was a minerals research fund. At the time, we capped the minerals research fund at $25 million, and once that hit $25 million, all the rest of the money from the royalties were going into the scholarship fund. I'm not sure about the size of the scholarship fund. I know it's very large because about 20% of all incoming freshmen at the University of Minnesota's four campuses get a $1,000 or $2,000 scholarship every single year. So it's a good size endowment. What this bill will do is, I believe it was 2 years ago, we changed the cap on the minerals fund from $25 million to $50 million. And the royalties that are coming in right now have already capped it out at $50 million. So there's quite a bit of mining activity going on in a university on university land. And so what we're doing here is taking the next $25 million that comes in and putting up to $25 million into an endowment for the operating mining, metallurgical, or related engineering degree program through the University of Minnesota at Mesabi Range Community and Technical College. And I have here with me Ron Alseth and Dan Julio. And Ron is actually the creator of this program. We've had some very, very good success. We've actually had some nationwide interest in what's been going on. And it's a very new and unique way of training engineers. And the results to date have been very good. But I'll let Ron tell you what's going on.
And it's Mr. Alseth?
Yes, Ron Alseth.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and Senators, the last time we met was just a month ago. I was in the galley, practiced my wave all the way down at the State of the State address. Governor Dayton recognized us for the success that this engineering program is having. And so I'm here today to tell you a little bit about the history of that program and how this program, the Iron Range Engineering Program, would open our doors to be partners with the university if this bill became law. The history of the program, it's a collaboration between Minnesota State Mankato and Itasca Community College's engineering program. Two of the strongest engineering programs in the state are these two, at Mankato and at Itasca. Up at Itasca, we have over 150 engineering students just in the first 2 years of engineering. Roughly 20 years ago, headed by the Boeing Corporation, industry across our country started asking for a new-look engineer. Engineers, if you look at the Sunday paper, what you see is Dilbert on the front of the comics. And engineers have a reputation as being incapable of good professional communication. Engineers, when we talk to you, some people think we're going to be looking at your shoes. Well, that's the reputation. That's unfortunately what a lot of engineers end up after their four-year college education. Here's why that happened. Years ago, before World War II, engineers learned engineering by doing engineering with engineers in an apprentice-type mode. After the war, all the veterans came back, and there were far, 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 far too many people that wanted to become engineers. So we went into the classroom mode, the 300 students in a classroom. And it stayed that way. In fact, in the 1980s, when I went to a regional university, I was sitting in a classroom, and people were talking at me. For all 4 years, didn't even do any sort of project. Well, if we were to go back to that same university today, despite 20 years of call for action from industry, unfortunately, the same classrooms would be being delivered, the material would be delivered the same way in the same classrooms. So there hasn't been the change that industry and the accreditation board have asked for. That's one piece of the history. The second piece of the history is in the late 1990s, educational psychologists started publishing a lot of new information on how people learn. The biggest publication was called How People Learn, and it was published by the National Academies in Washington, D.C. There's a lot of new knowledge on how we learn, and it relates to how engaged we are, what sort of motivation we have to learn this thing, and how active we are in doing the learning. It flies right in the face of sitting in a classroom and being a receiver of knowledge. It means we shouldn't be teacher-centered in our teaching. We should be learner-centered, and the learners should be active learners. After that all came out, I started working with a group of people from around the country, people from Stanford and Texas A&M, Penn State, University of Alabama, West Point, and we started developing a new-look engineering program. And we worked on it for over 10 years. And we brought it out, and we tried to sell it to the National Science Foundation and to a bunch of corporations. And we were unsuccessful at the national level, but we were successful at the Minnesota level. And this program was funded through the Iron Range Higher Education Fund up at the Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation Board. And in 2010, through this collaboration between Mankato, this program developed by all those folks from around the country started. And we started delivering the education. I brought along one of our original students. We just graduated our first class in December, 12 students. Nine of them have jobs in Minnesota as engineers. One is at graduate school at North Dakota State, and the other has been accepted to go to get a PhD in biomedical engineering at Notre Dame. So that's the success. 11 out of our 12 first graduates here a couple months later are out and active. Industry is one of our biggest collaborators. Our students learn while working at Hibbing Taconite or at Minnesota Power or at Medtronic. And their engineers are helping our engineers in their as a part of their education process. So that's a bit of the history. That's where we are. Let me see if there's anything else. We have two focuses. Our students do projects every semester. We do not have classrooms. 2 hours a week. We have one teacher in front of the 40 to 50 students, and that's it. Other than that, the students are out actively pursuing their knowledge and doing a real project, either for industry, about 80% are for industry, or an entrepreneurial project where they have developed some new technology and have the opportunity to do a startup business. So a few of our successes so far, our students won the Minnesota Cup Business Plan competition this past summer. They invented a new product. They won $10,000. They competed against all other college-aged inventors in the state, and they won that. We've won several awards from our headquarters, the Minnesota State Colleges and University, both from the chair of the board and from the board. There's a new award in Minnesota this year called Progress Minnesota. It's through the publication Finance and Commerce, and they're recognizing entrepreneurs and innovators from across our state. They actually have given our program two awards, one to me for my work and one to the whole program for its work. I normally don't talk about awards, but Senator Tomasoni told me to.
We appreciate that. Yeah. Senator Tomasoni talks about his awards. Yeah.
And the older I get, the better I was, I know.
So now zeroing in to mining engineering. We went out and talked to all of the mining companies, both the Ferris mining companies that are there now and the new companies that are coming, Twin Metals and Polymet. They have a need, an annual need, over the foreseeable future for between 8 and 10 new mining engineers per year. Mining engineering disappeared in our state decades ago, and in most states. There are very few mining engineering programs left in the country. It's either two or three. Senator Tomasoni and Representative Riccovino would like to bring mining engineering back to our state, a state that has such a rich mining history and where the economy is so bolstered by mining. Our Iron Range Engineering Program would welcome the University of Minnesota to form a new partnership so that students in this proposed program could learn side-by-side with mining engineers and with Iron Range Engineering students to get their mining engineering degree. And I believe the way the bill is written, the university has latitude on whether they would join this collaboration or stand alone. They're not told how to do it, but we are very proud of what we've accomplished and would be very proud to partner with the University of Minnesota. I've brought with me today one of our students. I'm going to introduce him. His name is Dan Huyu. And Dan, I'll let him tell you his story for a few minutes about his experience at Iron Range Engineering.
Welcome to the committee whenever you're ready, Mr. Huyu.
Thank you. Yeah. So I'm a 2007 graduate from Deer River High School, just 20 miles west of Grand Rapids, Minnesota. Been in northern Minnesota my whole life. Grew up on a farm, very mechanically inclined. I've had a rich background in hard work, having good work ethic, good morals. And I was looking for a career that really would support that. So I decided to go into engineering. Found that ICC Engineering had a very strong program, helped develop engineers for the future that were very hands-on, and that they come out of ICC ahead of other universities into their junior year. During my last semester at ICC, Ron proposed, or I guess it was actually my first semester, my sophomore year at ICC, Ron first came up to us students and proposed this idea of a project-based learning program that he was planning on starting. And we all got pretty excited about this. We had classes at ICC called Engineering Professional Development where we did small projects. We built aluminum foil canoes, had races to see who could do the best. And it was just real hands-on learning. You actually applied what you learned. And then there was also the professional aspect of it, project management, how to work on a team and communicate well with each other. And I actually really enjoyed this aspect of my engineering education at ICC. And then so when it was proposed that I could finish my degree out and get my bachelor's degree following the same model, I was right on board. Ron sold it very well. He told us, it was going to be a new program. We're going to be the first one in the nation to do it. It was going to be something new and exciting. But we'd also be able to take ownership in our learning. Any traditional university way I understand it, you have a fairly set course of what classes you can take. And at Iron Range Engineering, you actually get to develop your own curriculum personal to you. So in a sense, no two students would necessarily have the same experience or have gone through the exact same classes. And I thought that was pretty interesting in that I could pick what the topics that I was interested in and actually learn about them, which is way more engaging to me. Rather than being told what to learn, I actually get to learn about what I was interested in. And you get a deeper level of understanding and feel more connected and, just when you own your own learning. And then also there's all sorts of opportunities with Iron Range Engineering. Basically, if you wanted to do something, you put together a proposal, and if the faculty saw it as a benefit to you, you could pursue it. We got one of the only background or behind-the-scenes tours of the new Target Stadium that was driven by students. Myself and another student actually started calling around, figuring out where we can get this tour from an engineering standpoint, what went into engineering the Target Center. When they had told us that nobody, they weren't giving any tours to the public, to any schools, to anybody, and we found a way to make that happen. So we were able to make our own opportunities. Also, with the entrepreneurial side of things, you're not just getting an education, learning, and going to be put into industry. There's the opportunity to pursue an entrepreneurial venture, whether it be your own idea or a company submits an idea to you and then you develop it for them. I am working my second semester now on a project or an idea that I came up with. And right now, I'm going to be graduating in May, and I have a couple of options post-graduation. I had a summer internship just last summer with Hibbing Taconite Mine as a reliability engineer, and I was able to get on a part-time internship now as an entry-level engineer in training, with the company for this semester. So part-time right now, I'm going to school 3 days a week at Iron Range Engineering. 2 days a week, I'm actually working for Hibbing Taconite with the intent of a full-time job come graduation. Now, I really have the option between accepting that position with industry or developing my own business and my own business idea and working for myself. So really, there's all sorts of opportunities within Iron Range Engineering to pursue something, a more typical job, post-graduation, developing your own business, the flexibility in coming up with your own curriculum, something that you're interested in, and really the sense of ownership of your education. That is one of the biggest things I've learned throughout my Iron Range engineering career is different leadership skills. And the one thing that really stands out as far as leading people is giving them ownership, letting them make some decisions and feel like it's their fault if something was successful. And that's really what the faculty and staff and everyone's done here for the Iron Range engineering students is it's your fault if you're successful, and it's mostly your fault if you fail. So, you know, it puts a little bit of pressure on you. Nobody likes to fail. So you really develop an ownership for your education. You're more involved, and you're going to be more aggressive about it and learn better and deeper.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Are there... Mr. Allseth, you have something.
Madam Chair, I think there's one more thing that I need to, a piece of context that I left out. This program is just the last 2 years. It's the junior and senior year. All of our students come from Minnesota's community colleges. So all of the students we have had and have graduated and are still in our program are Minnesota Community College graduates. It's the last 2 years that is our program.
Madam Chair,
Senator Tomasoni?
I forgot to mention I need to do a couple of an author's amendment that is, I think we can do it orally. On line 110, 2011 should be changed to 2012. And then delete section 2, and I think we need to fix the effective date to 2012 also.
So, Senator Tomasoni, you are on line 110.
Yeah.
You're changing it from 2011 to 2012.
Yeah.
And then on page 2, you're deleting lines 216 to 223?
Correct. And then I think that would mean you'd have to fix that effective date also to say retroactive to January 1, 2012.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Senator Saxog has moved Senator Tomasoni's oral author's amendment. Did everybody catch the amendment? All those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. And I believe, well, Senator Koch, did you have a question?
Not so much a question, Madam Chair, but just a comment. It was last year I had the opportunity, I think we traveled to Senator Saxhog's area, visited a mine, visited the school, and I guess in my mind, I sort of had folks pictured maybe that looked a little bit more like Senator Saxhog and Senator Tomasoni. But what I found... And I'll say this, delicately. It was a younger crowd.
Now, where are you going here?
It was a younger crowd. It was exciting. There was a lot of younger people working at the mines in high-paying positions and positions of responsibility. And it was really exciting to see the industry that I had sort of in my mind sort of had as pictured as kind of, you know, an older industry, maybe, I don't know, in its twilight. This was an exciting place with a lot of young folks and a lot of really a lot of opportunities, and that was good to see. And so, you know, I'm glad to see this bill, and I think that there's some very exciting things happening on the range,
Senator Pope,
and hope to continue on.
That's a very good observation, because the industry itself, we're pretty excited about the very near future, because not only are there going to be more young people working there, because the baby boomers are about ready to retire, and there's probably about 700 or 800 of them that are probably going to retire within the next 5 or 6 years. And in addition to that, we have proposed expansions at Keetac, which will hire another 100 permanent workers. We have SR Steel, which is probably going to hire somewhere in the neighborhood of 500 or 600 people if they go all the way to steel production. Magnetation has just hired, how many, Tom? 300 people. So there's projects going on that are actually taking the industry to the next step. And if PolyMet and the Duluth Metals Minerals comes along, it's got some very big implications for diversifying the mining industry too.
Yes. Senator Polk.
So I think it's a good approach, Senator Tomasoni. I mean, I think we got to keep those projects going. I would say that, and keep the opportunities there. And additionally, prepare folks, prepare, you know, with education, people to provide the labor and the know-how. It's exciting.
And I got a funny feeling that Mr. Allseth would say that when the industry people are working with the prospective engineers, that they learn if these kids are any good or not, and they find out they're pretty darn good, and they want to hire them when they come right out of the blocks, right?
Mr. Allseth?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Senator Koch. One of the reasons that this program started is that it's a ways up there from here. And what the industry was asking for a program like this, because they were having a hard time attracting lots of new people to the region. They would hire graduates from other places. They would come, they would spend a year or two, and then they would go back to their other place. And so we're looking to bring new students from other places, have them be educated in this scenario, in this situation, and then stay.
Mm-hmm. Good. Thank you. I have Senator Carlson. You have a question, Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Tomasoni, this is a great project, but can you explain how this is going to be different, or is this complementary to that Itasca-Mankato partnership versus the Mesabi U of M? Can you just kind of
Madam Chair and Senator Carlson, I think Mr. also touched on it earlier. It's intended to be the same through the University of Minnesota. And as Mr. Altsa said, there's enough latitude in the bill where the U can decide to do it on their own in conjunction, using the hands-on approach that they're using there, or they can do it in conjunction with the program that's going on at the Mesabi College. And so that's something I think that'll be worked out once the bill gets passed into law, so that the funding source is there. But am I correct on that? Is that how you're
Mr.
understanding
Allseth.
It?
Madam Chair, Senator Carlson, yes, you are correct. It would be complementary. It would not be any sort of duplication. In our current program, we do not go into the areas of mining and metallurgical engineering. And so we're looking to complement that. And whether we partner directly or indirectly is yet to be determined.
And Senator Carlson, I do have Provost Hansen who is going to testify. So I've got a couple other senators who want questions, but then maybe that would help
too.
Yep. From the U of M. I have Senator Brown.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Tomasoni, it may be that your testifiers are going to talk about this, but it appears that the endowed mineral research account is on the losing end of this proposal, and I was just wondering if you could tell us what the endowed mineral research account is and why it is they would no longer need these funds.
Senator Tomasoni.
If you look in the bill, the minerals research account is capped at $50 million. And so I believe that it's already hit that cap, but it's, if it's not, it's very close to that cap. And what would end up happening is that now that it's at $50 million, the money wouldn't be going in there anymore. So it wouldn't be a loser. It would stay at that cap. So they would still continue to get the same amount of money in the minerals research account. The one that might be the loser is the scholarship fund, but then this is going into educating students, so it's probably a wash if you want to take a look at that. And so I don't think that the minerals research account is a loser on this.
Senator Brown.
Madam Chair and Senator Tomasoni, so is the endowed mineral research account using those funds?
Well, Senator Tomasoni.
Madam Chair, Senator Brown, what happens is it's an endowment, so they take a percentage each year, and then it's invested into minerals research at the Coleraine Lab and at the National Research and Research Institute in Duluth. So they are using the funds for minerals research.
Okay. I think it's that account calling me right
now. I think it might be your wife.
Yeah. But, they're wanting to know if there's any opposition to this.
I don't believe so. I think the university is neutral, but I think you're going to hear on when they come.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Senator Roebling.
Okay, Madam Chair. And I have questions along the same line. I'm glad that one was answered. But then the endowed scholarship account is also, now you said that you would be switching it from one scholarship form to another. But the scholarships would now be targeted for students in the minerals program. But it's a lot of money. I'm trying to figure out how much of a scholarship fund would it be going into an endowment also, and then you're going to be getting earnings off of that for the scholarships. So at first it wouldn't be much money, and then it would grow. Or I'm trying to picture this.
Yeah, Madam Chair and Senator Roebling, you've got it correct. And then this one would be capped at $25 million. So once this one hits $25 million, then the royalties that will be coming in from mining would then all go into the other scholarship fund that they've been going into. And you weren't here earlier, but I mentioned that we started doing this back in about 94, and we capped the minerals research account at $25 million. And when it hit $25 million, then we put all the money into the scholarship fund. And if I'm correct in this, there's about 20% of all the incoming freshmen at the four campuses of the University of Minnesota receive a $1,000 or $2,000 Air and Range scholarship. And you don't have to be from the Air and Range to get it. But then what we did was there was some activity going on that we hadn't experienced before, so we took the cap off of the minerals research account and moved it up to $50 million. And that cap has been hit. And so now what would happen with this new money is it would start going into this the other account that we just mentioned. And if I'm reading this correctly, I think the scholarship fund will still get half. So this new account would be also be capped at $25 million. And then the royalties or the interest off of it would be used for the scholarships.
Senator Roebling.
But the pool of applicants for the scholarships, or I don't know if it would just be automatic, because are the scholarships currently automatic for any student who goes to the U of M from Minnesota?
Senator Tomasoni.
Madam Chair and Senator Roebling, it's actually a pretty small pool because I think you got to be in the top 10% of your class in order to get one.
Okay.
So this is now, but this is a different, going to be a different one because this is going to be somebody who's applying to be an engineer. And I think Mr. Alseth has a better idea of how that'll work.
Madam Chair, I'm looking for an idea of how the money is dispersed in the one scholarship fund that we're going to be now capping and then developing the new one. So I want to know the difference of which types of students and how much money might be available.
Madam Chair and Senator Roebling, the $50 million, that is the minerals research account. A percentage of it, I think it's 5% every year, gets distributed to the NRRI and the Coleraine Lab, and they do minerals research with that money. The other account, which is in the hundreds of millions of dollars, is the scholarship fund, and a percentage of that then gets distributed to the students that apply for it and qualify going to the campuses of the University of Minnesota. This new fund now, instead of any money going into the minerals research account, will go into this new fund, and then the University of Minnesota will use it for scholarships for training people who want to be engineers under this particular program.
Senator Roebling?
I'm wondering about like applicants and the amount of scholarship money that might be available to a student.
Mr. Alseth.
Madam Chair, Senator Roebling, just one clarification. All the money that was going into build that scholarship fund is through the University of Minnesota isn't changing. It has continued. It will continue to go there. What's not happening is the money that where the minerals research stopped, it didn't also start funneling into that same fund. So the scholarship fund, which has been building, that isn't changing at all. It's continued to build, Where the cap happened on minerals research, the cap has been reached. Now the money would go into all costs of the program for mining engineering, including student scholarships. And the student scholarship amount would be driven by the market on what sort of scholarship is needed to offer to be offered to get the students to attend. And that would all be done through the university. Has your question about the scholarships been clarified?
I understand that. How many students, though, do you expect to be serving with the new scholarship money? How big will your program be, and will it'll just be for those students who are attending these few institutions?
Mr. Alseth.
Madam Chair, Senator Roebling, the need is somewhere between 8 and 10 graduates every year. So we're talking about 20 students.
Madam Chair.
At a time.
Senator Roebling.
So at some point, are you expecting to be able to give them full scholarships or some kind of partial scholarships? I'm trying to just get a feel for that.
Mr. Alseth.
Madam Chair, Senator Roebling, at the startup of a new program, it's typically pretty close to a full scholarship to get students to take that risk of joining a new program. With our students that were in the Iron Range Engineering program, in the first year, it was a full scholarship. Then when the second group of students came in, it started dropping off a little bit. Now we're under half. As you attract students to a new program and you build a name, there's less market need to offer them a full scholarship. But in this program, I would expect that students would get between a half and a full scholarship to become mining engineers through this program. But that's the university that would be setting that. I don't think that's part of the bill. But that's my understanding of what it would take to get students into that program.
Madam Chair.
Senator Roebling.
Question for Senator Tomasoni. And I know that this is an important industry to the range, but I also know that doctors and dentists and people like that are critical and sometimes in short supply on the range. I am just wondering, you know, a full scholarship is a huge benefit, but could some of that money also be well spent and not give, like, full scholarships, give partial scholarships, and maybe give scholarships to some other areas of study that you also need and tie those scholarships to coming back and working on the range?
No, Madam Chair, Senator Roebling, that's not not a bad idea, but we don't have any of those programs up on the range. And so that might be something we might have to develop, though. And in fact, once this one gets capped at $25 million, we can maybe do another one that does something similar, because that's actually a very good idea. Because I would love to see some dentists developed up on the Iron Range. We have a dental program at the Gibbon Community College that is affiliated with the University of Minnesota, and so that's not a bad idea, actually. And we have done some incentive programs at the IRRRB to get dentists to stay on the range and to come to the range, and we actually did the same thing for some doctors. And so the problem is that we can't seem to attract people who are from the metro area. We seem to attract people who are either from the Iron Range or from the rural area that want to come up there. And so even though we have the incentive programs in place, oftentimes the people that come there are not new people. They're still people that were, which is okay, I guess, because then they didn't leave and come go somewhere else. So.
But, Senator
and
Saxon.
Madam Chair, Senator Roebling, I don't want to digress too much, but the whole rural medical program out of the University of Minnesota Duluth is kind of geared for rural Minnesota and northern Minnesota. So in terms of doctors, I think, you know, we're doing pretty well because of a program like that was developed.
Senator Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Tomasoni, if this new account weren't set up, where would this money flow?
Senator Tomasoni.
The way it's set up right now, the $50 million, I believe we've reached the $50 million cap on the minerals research account, so the rest of the money would go into the scholarship account.
Madam Chair, Senator Tomasoni,
no.
Does that have a cap on
No, there's no cap
Senator
on
Tomasoni.
That.
Senator Tomasoni.
And I don't know what the figure is, but I think it's in the hundreds of millions right now.
Could you repeat
Senator
that?
Brown.
I'm sorry.
I said I don't know what the figure is right now. I think the University of Minnesota can probably tell us how big that scholarship account is right now, but I think it's in the hundreds of millions.
The hundreds of millions.
Yes, Senator
okay.
Brown.
Thank you.
We do have Provost Hansen from the University of Minnesota who would like to testify. If you'd like to join us at the table. And Senator Tomasoni, while changing testifiers, I just have a really quick question. Of the bill on line 1.16, could you give me the definition of metallurgical?
Oh, yeah, it's got something to do with metal.
You know, Senator Tomasoni, that's kind of what I thought. So at least we've got a common definition of the word there.
We understand the bill now.
Provost Hansen, thank you for joining us today. And please, whenever you're ready, just identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Karen Hansen. I'm the Senior Vice President for Academic Affairs and Provost at the University of Minnesota. And thank you to the committee. And I appreciate this opportunity to communicate our interest in the proposal and in the steps that we've taken to evaluate how we might best respond. Service to the state of Minnesota is central to our mission, and we recognize the importance of the goals of that underlie this proposal. So we've asked the relevant units in the Twin Cities and Duluth to begin investigating the viability of various options for programs that would respond to the proposal. Any new educational program will serve our citizens if and only if it's educationally sound, cost-effective, and of the highest quality. All new programs at the university require vigorous vetting on all these dimensions, and when a department or college or campus brings forward a proposal for a new degree or delivery of a new program at a new site, we need to understand both the demand for the program and how it serves the state and the region, the startup costs for the program, whether new faculty must be hired, whether a classroom or a laboratory or technology investments have to be made, and whether, as in engineering, there would be national professional accreditation issues that would require attention. We asked both the University of Minnesota Duluth campus and the College of Science and Engineering on the Twin Cities campus to prepare proposals for programs that would support mining engineering education on the Iron Range. They've completed that phase of the work just this week, so I can offer some information about that, and you know, we are still in the process of working through this. Duluth, which offers 5 accredited BS degrees in engineering, in chemical, civil, electrical, industrial, and mechanical engineering, offered 5 main alternatives and some initial estimates of the pros and cons of each. The first was a standalone Bachelor of Science in mining engineering on the Iron Range, and the second was a standalone 2-year mining technology degree on the Iron Range. Both of them would have significant startup costs, primarily for faculty and some operational costs. And there is a slight worry that they might offer options which are more limited for the students than might be optimal. A large percentage of students who begin in engineering shift their focus in the first 2 years. And if these programs are constrained to sort of one very tight curriculum in mining engineering, that could be an issue for the students' options in finishing an engineering degree. Third option offered by Duluth was a BS in mining engineering at the Duluth campus, and that has some advantages in terms of the resources that are already there, but it has some disadvantages from the point of view of the proposal because it might not offer as much interaction with the Iron Range communities and employers as might be optimal. It also might not offer the security of the traditional engineering degrees during economic downturns in the mining industry. A fourth option was a minor in mining engineering offered in coordination with one of the engineering BS degrees on the Duluth campus. This could be implemented very quickly, and we might think of that in conjunction with what their fifth option was, which was some variation on that, a minor, but also offering substantial components of the degree taught on site on the range. The College of Science and Engineering in the Twin Cities proposed a geo-resources engineering degree that would involve a mining-related curriculum within an established degree program. That's the degree program is in geoengineering, which is offered through the Department of Civil Engineering in the College of Science and Engineering. That department, by the way, is the only remaining independent component of the university's original School of Mines. So it's it would be an appropriate home for it as well. Currently, that degree program has three tracks in geoenvironmental, geofluids, geomechanics, and what the school proposes is a fourth track within the degree in georesources. This would offer, they offered a sample curriculum. It would offer a broad education, which would help graduates to adapt to new and changing work requirements. It would be comparable to a mining engineering program, but with an emphasis on fundamental analysis of mining issues and sustainable design. The Twin Cities program could be combined with internships on the range, and one of the benefits of the Twin Cities proposal is that there is a graduate program there so that undergraduates, which does a great deal of sponsored research, and undergraduates could participate in that and thus have a broader range of experiences during their undergraduate years. As I say, both campuses developed sample curricula, and they just finished that. They need to do a little more investigation on the dimensions I mentioned earlier that we usually go through when we look at new degrees to evaluate fully the desirability and the viability of the various options. But they are working on that even now. So yeah, that's how far we've gotten on the response.
That's pretty good.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Senator Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm trying to understand on the handout, Senator Tomasoni, you have with a fiscal note on the front, you have a chart on page four of page seven, and it says expenditure and or revenue changes. I'm just trying to understand some of these dollar amounts. Are those dollar amounts that are listed, are those in the thousands, or are those the actual? For example, the total for endowed chair account, is that saying 85,000 or is that 85 million?
Good
Senator
question.
Tomasoni?
I don't know. I didn't write the fiscal note. I don't see where it's. It looks like 85,000 to me because, Madam Chair, because I would think that's the amount that we would need for the endowed chair, right? 85,000.
Yeah. I would think so too. It's the spinoff from the endowment.
Okay. And then, Madam Chair, another question.
Senator Brown.
When it talks about the distributions, is that what being distributed into those? I realize this is going to be a loss for them, but is that what would have been going into those accounts, or are those the disbursements they're making, they would have made out of the account in terms of scholarships or so forth?
Senator Tomasoni, would it be helpful if fiscal staff helped us out on
if
that?
If they know
Ms.
the
Weidman
answer,
that would
be way better if they know the answer.
I can guess at this if you want me to,
but I don't know if it'll be the right guess.
Madam Chair, members, someone at the U of M prepared this. So I don't know that I can exactly address all the specifics, but I think it has to do with kind of going back to currently. The mining royalties, half of it are going to the endowed scholarships, and half of it, the revenue from these royalties every year, are going to the endowed scholarships, and half are going to NRRI for research. And under the current proposal, they would take that half that's currently going for research and splitting that so that half would still be going for research, and the other half would be going for these scholarships for students within the engineering program. And basically what this is showing is the new accounts that are created and then how that money would be flowing in and out of those accounts
right.
as a result of the revenue that was being put in.
And what, Madam Chair, what I'm trying to get my mind wrapped around is how much money are we talking about on a yearly basis? If we're looking at an endowed scholarship account that we think has hundreds of millions of dollars in it, I'm just trying to figure out the flow of money and the actual amount of money that we're talking about. Maybe I just need to speak to someone from the U directly on this, but I am concerned about that.
Madam Chair,
Senator Thomas,
Senator Brown, the part of the answer to your question is it depends on where the mines are mining. And if they're mining in a University of Minnesota trust land, then there's a certain amount of revenue that will come in each year. If they're not mining there, then there's less coming in. So it all depends on that. The key answer to your question is what staff was just trying to explain, is that when the two accounts are distributed the royalties, once the mineral account reaches $50 million, it doesn't get any more of the royalties. It all goes into the scholarship fund. So I don't know. Let's just say $1 million comes in from the royalties. Well, half of that would go to the minerals account and half would go to the scholarship fund. Once the minerals account reaches the $50 million, then the whole $1 million will go into the scholarship fund. Now, the amount that comes out of the scholarship fund for scholarships is, since it's an endowment, I think it's 5.5%, if I'm not mistaken. Isn't that correct? Okay, so 5.5% of whatever that is for scholarships. The way this bill will work is that once the minerals account is capped at $50 million, $500,000 of that million will go now into the new scholarship fund, and the other $500,000 will go into the endowment fund. So the endowment fund is still going to be getting its half.
Ms. Wyden.
Madam Chair, this is just an example. For example, in 2010, the mineral lease revenue distribution was about $1.8 million, and that $1.8 million, about $900,000 of it went into the endowed scholarship, and $900,000 went into the mineral account. So that is, as Senator Tomasoni was saying, that 50-50 split.
Is there anyone else who would like to testify on the bill? We do have two more bills up this afternoon, so I'd like to move along, but is there anyone else who would like to testify on Senate File 1799?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Provost.
I could testify on the next one. I don't know if it's relevant. It's going to probably cover into the next one as well. My name is Rick Heller, everybody. I currently unofficially represent the twice exceptional learners, who are learners that have been labeled or been said they are disabled and also are noted to be gifted. And also the unofficially represent the print disabled. I just want to note one thing. I think this is very important that we take a close look at engineers, because I found one thing that was exceptional about individual learners when it comes to IQ, which is ability and potential. I suggest, since K through 12 or P20 are linking up now, that they look at these individuals not just based on their percent scores for scholarship eligibility, but also their learning style and preferences. Because if you look in an ADOVA study that was done on relationships for students who select careers for outcomes, you will find one correlation in IQ only, and it has to do with the visual spatial learners. I would challenge anybody here. We'd have the discussion. However, I've thoroughly researched it, and until we really look at these individual learners and their learning preferences, learning style, learning profile, or as I say, choice. As you all know, because right now Minnesota or nationally, we were targeting three things about learners. One is called strengths, preferences, and interests. I encourage the growth in this area. However, at times when I see how kids perform when they're going in a transition from, for instance, PSEO or higher education, they might not be performing at their full potential, nor may they not even know their own learning styles. And I think for self-advocacy skills, obviously earlier is better than later. I thank you again for this opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Heller. I appreciate it. Senator Saxog.
Well, Madam Chair, I'd move Senate File 1799 is amended to be laid over for possible inclusion.
On Senator Saxog's motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Thank you, Senator Tomasoni.
Madam Chair, I miss this committee. I really do like this committee.
You know, you can sit in with us anytime. We'll put a little chair at the end of the table. Now we have Senate File 2201, Senator Olson.
For years. Everything moved to K-12.
Thank you for joining us, Senator Olson. I understand you're chairing your committee, too. So, and I will say we do have your bill and one other. If we can get them done today, that would be great. So, Senator Olson, and I understand there's an A4 amendment that you have as an author's amendment.
Thank you.
I'll give you a minute. You just sat down.
If I could have a copy of it, that would be fine. Okay, thank you. The A4 amendment is an amendment that does one thing, and that is change the effective date so that there isn't any cost impact within this biennium.
And Senator Miller offers the A4 amendment as an author's amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, the Senate File 2201 is a bill about individualized learning schools. It is an innovation that we are proposing that it involves some of the current structure of innovation that we've had in place for some time. Charter schools, site-governed schools, area learning centers, contract schools, that recognize that our young people in our school settings do not all function effectively in one model of schooling. And we are struggling with that as we've had more and more emphasis on academics and the academic approach to teaching, that there are young people who are leaving school or are falling behind and not functioning well, are not prepared when they are beginning college. And this is something that we are working to try to correct. It is a factor in the achievement gap as well. So this particular act allows, it's not a mandate, it's allows school districts to identify either within their schools or form an individualized learning school that can function in ways that will better serve the learning needs of the students that they are charged with educating. We have had it lays out many of the kinds of things that are part of that. The reason that we're in higher education, even though this is a K-12 school, is that there are young people that are prepared to go faster than what we might have in place. And so the role of post-secondary enrollment options, the idea of changing and allowing young people to proceed at the pace that they are prepared to do, which may allow for earlier completion. We provided for that in our bill last year so they can complete and be rewarded for that going on to college. And so this will have some impact on higher education from the standpoint that we do want our young people to have had some post-secondary experience. They may get it as a result of some of the behavior changes that happened in our secondary schools as a result of post-secondary enrollment options, because many of our schools work to develop the College in the Schools program. We are one of the fastest growing, I think the top five fastest growing schools in terms of advanced placement. So there's more and more students that are taking rigorous courses, and if they pass at a high enough, get a high enough score on the final test, they get college credit for it. And so this bill, I believe, includes some of the provisions. I have them in another bill as well that allows assures that they can get dual credit between high school and post-secondary when they do complete these programs rather than having to choose one or the other. And it also lifts some prohibitions, I believe, on advertising. Post-secondary schools were not allowed to use in any promotional materials the financial implications. In other words, you could save money in college tuition if you were able to complete some of this while you're still in high school. So those are the reasons. I may have missed some. I don't have just a specific list, but that's the general tenor of what this bill is and the role that it has with higher education. As we're trying to work more through the P20 partnership to build a kind of a continuum that's based on individual needs between our all the way from early childhood up through our secondary and post-secondary schools, this is one of the efforts that I think fits that model and those objectives quite well. Dr. Kirk Johnson is here with me and has been a part, I think, of studying and working toward innovation and has been a co-conspirator in the Christensen in the whole theory of disruptive innovations and the role that they play in changing the way, whether it's bureaucracies or, you know, business functions, whether they are carried out. And he is the co-author of the book Disrupting Class, which applies those principles to our public education. So if you're willing, I would like to have him describe some of the thought process that has helped to prepare this bill.
Dr. Johnson, welcome to the committee, and whenever you're ready, just identify yourself for the record.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Curtis Johnson, and I'm representing the organization known as Education Evolving. Thank you for the promotion, Senator. I'll be very brief and try not to repeat the very fine presentation of the purposes of the bill the Senator has already shared with you. We do hope you notice how broadly bipartisan it is, both in the Senate and the House. We hope it stays that way. I'd like to comment briefly on why the push for individualization. And if you looked at good sample of the mission statements of K-12 districts around the state of Minnesota, you would be impressed with how many times they talk about the students as an individual, about how it needs to be personal. And yet, this is nearly never done. And even though we talk about it and we go to conferences about it and everybody agrees that today's students are not only more different from previous generations than ever before, they're more different from each other than ever before, we still mostly arrange school as though all kids were the same, as though they all can learn the same thing in the same way, in the same place, at the same pace. And that's the fiction we practice day after day. So this bill is really all about having the legislature make a bold statement that says we want more individualization. And some of you in one-on-one conferences have said, well, can't the school districts already do this? Well, yes, mostly they can, but mostly they do not. And the legislative role typically is sometimes mandating that certain things need to be done, sometimes prohibiting things you don't want to see any more of. But occasionally, your role is to encourage something that you want more of. And that is really the heart of this bill, to say you want to encourage individualization, whether your big cause is closing gaps or whether it's opening wider doors for kids who can learn faster to soar and not be held back. Whatever it is, radical personalization of the learning opportunity is the key to doing it. It's the key to motivation, without which you really don't make much progress. So what the bill does, in addition to encouragement, it offers certain waivers for those who are approved, whether they are a charter school, a contract school, or a district school under the self-governed 09 amendments. And as the senator said, the reason it's before you today is because it does make certain other changes in law that would facilitate individualization, and in particularly amending the Post-Secondary Education Options Act. It does four things just for clarity there. First, it does allow students the clarity that they will get credit both for college and high school. Now, in point of fact, most colleges and universities ignore current law. Current law prohibits that, but they give it to them anyway. And all we're saying here is let's put into law what is sensible practice and get rid of that fiction. Secondly, it does, as the senator said, remove the ban on advertising, on recruiting, on soliciting. And the theory there is pretty obvious. There's no point in protecting students and their families from information that may be beneficial to them. And third, it provides for the possibility that students might go get a course, probably online, from a non-Minnesota institution that is accredited in the United States, and this would make such courses, if they were successfully completed, eligible for credit. And lastly, it extends the opportunity down to 9th and 10th graders. We understand that some members do have some reservations about 9th graders. We would only point out two things. One is that private schools do this. Former Commissioner Wadle shared with another committee an example from Breck School that sent a middle school student to North Hennepin Community College, where he excelled in very rigorous math and chemistry courses, went to the university a lot earlier, and graduated about age 18 or 19. So we would tell you not many ninth graders are going to use this. Not many ninth graders are going to be considered ready to do it by their parents, by their schools. But if only five a year did, why hold back the ones who could really succeed under this program? Thank you.
And thank you very much. I am just wondering, there was a little bit of confusion. Can you tell me the section that the 9th and 10th grader portion is in? Because I think since we have the two bills going through, I think this, I haven't found it in here. If you can give me the
different bill,
page number and line or something, so I can see the language.
Yeah, it would be in on line 6.22. And yes, Madam Chair, there is another bill, a separate bill, that is just about the PSEO program. We understand that's judged to be different enough from the provisions proposed in this bill that you're going to hear it separately.
And Dr. Johnson, on line 6.22, what I see is if after all 11th and 12th graders have been, and actually I'm starting on 6.21. If after all 11th and 12th grade students have applied for a course, additional students can be accommodated in the course.
6.17.
6.17?
It really is a reference, Madam Chair, to allowing the 9th and 10th graders to have the capacity.
Thank you, Dr. Johnson. I just wanted to make sure.
And Madam Chair, you'll note that that is current law. Yeah. Current law. Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you very much. I heard some other senators wondering exactly where that is, too. So thank you for pointing that out. Mr. Heller does want to testify. If there are other questions right now, we could.
Can I also add that I know that there is some angst on the part of possibly ninth graders. Many of them, the ones that are pursuing it, particularly in this context, generally, I don't think there's much fear. But a provision that it doesn't show up in this bill, in current law, is a very thorough discussion of the role of parents and counseling before making decisions of this sort, and that they ought to be examining any of the what they might believe are consequences or of making these decisions. So I think that should still. That provision of the current law is very important in terms of the counseling and whether a student may be ready to handle a different kind of environment. Many of them just absolutely blossom and are looked after by some of the older students because they have you know, they blossom under the challenge of attending a post-secondary institution, both the environment as well as the challenge.
Madam Chair, if I might add one other comment. We didn't talk much about finance, and you do have a fiscal note, which is pretty minimal.
No, that has been erased by
that's been erased by the shift. Okay. But this does have financial implications, particularly for Minnesota families. If 10,000 students a year use this to the degree that they could graduate from high school with a year of college under their belt, families save about $65 million a year. And if the preponderance of those enrollments go to community and technical colleges, where you actually spend less money per student than you do in high school, the state's in a position to enjoy savings of $30 to $40 million. So it's not without its financial consequences, and most of them are positive.
Senator Olson, there was language added to the other bill where this appears, or somehow it was, my understanding is it was worked out that there would be some requirements, some requirement that the students would have to meet in order to, as I recall, if you recall, Senator Olson, our discussions that
Senate
we had.
Senate File 1531, I'm not good at retaining bill numbers, but I believe that's the one, is, yeah. The other one that I am the chief author of, that is has been referred here. So you will have a look at that. That duplicates a few of the things that are in this bill, as well has had made some changes. So at some point we need to reconcile that, but I think we'll. It doesn't have to be right at this point.
Well, and Senator Olson, I just want to make sure that some of the agreements and discussions that we had regarding those 9th and 10th graders would eventually make it into both or wherever the language was going to go forward.
Madam Chair, the other bill has had its focus particularly on the career and technical. And that was the one where, as we've had diminished opportunities in our secondary schools, we are actually losing students, and there was hope allowing for 9th and 10th graders. We did amend that so that the 9th graders are not in it in the other bill, taking a course, a kind of a beginning course in a career and technical area, to see if that will relight the fire and to stay on in school and recognize the importance both of the academics as well as proceeding with the technical program. So that is the focus of that one. This one is more generic in terms of all of the academic. The other one was focused on career and technical.
Thank you. Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just would want to support Senator Olson's bill here. I guess I was a little unsure until I had a visit in my office from Holly, who I mistook for a senior in college, and she is actually a senior in high school. And she convinced me without a doubt that this is the right direction to go. So there's a shout out to Holly.
Holly here?
Yes, she is.
Well, maybe this committee would like to hear from Holly.
We are very, very tight on time.
Just a minute or two. She can.
Please thank you, Senator. Yourself for the record.
My name is Holly Marsh. I am a high school senior, as Senator was kind to say. I'm an intern with the Center for Policy Studies. I've had some involvement with this bill, and I'm also a former PSEO student. In my junior year, I was enrolled with a PSEO course at Hamline University and also one at St. Catharines, which I had to drop because of health reasons. It was an excellent opportunity. I really appreciated it. I ended the class at the top of the graduating class, or the top of the class, with an A grade. I really enjoyed it. At that time, it would have been better for me to have taken advantage of post-secondary education opportunities in my 10th grade year because of the way my scheduling was working out. But, of course, it's only open to juniors and seniors under current law. I really do encourage you to support this. You know, as we say, people do have concerns that 9th and 10th graders aren't mature enough to handle being in an environment with college-age students. For those of us who are mature enough and who are prepared, it can be a very, very good opportunity not only to advance with more difficult material, but also to, as Senator Olson said, to light the fire of passion for learning, which is also very significant. So I do encourage you to support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Senator Pappas, did you have a question?
Madam Chair, yes, I'm kind of... I was very surprised about the conflict in law about PSEO, so I'm really glad, Senator Olson, that you're straightening that out and clarifying that. I didn't realize also that we have the 9th and 10th grade provision, although as you dig down, you really could only include a 9th or 10th grader if it was necessary to offer the class at all. So probably it didn't happen,
right.
Which is why we think we needed to add 9th and 10th graders. So I'm happy with that, but I do think that there were some other requirements that we should be talking about down the road, which is, you know, you have to have a C average. If you don't do that, you can't take any more courses. So I think that'll help people feel a little bit better about this expansion.
Further questions, Senator Latz?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've got a question about, the funding on some of this. It's a little unclear to me how higher education institutions that are for-profit institutions fit into this. Who would pay for the coursework at the for-profit higher ed institutions? What impact might that have on other aspects of the finances in the system?
Senator Olson? No.
Chair, I don't think there's any change in that regard. I think that there's certain eligibility that's required, and I think one of those is that there's an accreditation issue as well as grant students that is a requirement to participate in post-secondary enrollment options. And that hasn't changed.
Senator Latz.
I'm sure I don't know a lot about the PSEO, how it's set up, but do the local school districts end up having to pay anything for those courses?
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, the way that post-secondary enrollment options works is that the aid that is generated for the course or the hour that is spent, the way that just follows with the student to that institution. And there's no supplement made if the tuition is higher. The higher education institutions accept that as the payment for their participation in that program. The other thing that we shouldn't take totally out of context is that this isn't just standalone post-secondary enrollment options. We're talking about individualized learning within a framework of a school that has been proposed and approved that they follow one of the models in terms of governance and structure that we now have. And that is our charter school law, our site-governed schools law, our area learning centers, and our contract. Some of our districts have contract alternative schools. And so those are kind of encompassed in this as being some of the governing models that a district might choose to use as separating a school to focus on individualized learning. And I think it's also meant to encourage looking beyond whether it's the new technology, the different kinds of innovation that will address the learning needs of these individuals. Now, I think Holly, you're going to attend Avalon School, aren't you? She's been attending a charter. She's gone through some homeschooling and then a charter school, and I believe is now an employee of the National Park Service as a senior in high school. I mean, she worked through some of the project-based kind of learning, some of the approaches that are options here that individualize, so that she was able to follow her individual interests and growth, and you can see the maturity and the excitement about learning that this can generate. She was a perfect model of that, and we'd like to see more young people experience that. And I think we should not delay, at least in making this kind of a model and option available to our schools, our school districts, and our schools to encourage these young people. As Senator Stumpf and I have been very concerned about the career and technical education, we got a new piece of evidence the other day that showed that young people in their 10th, 11th, and 12th grade who take, I believe it's about 400 hours, equivalent of 1 hour a day for a year, their graduation rate is 97.13. So we've maintained that lack of these kinds of opportunities are part of what's been contributing to the demise of our secondary graduation rate. And so if we, right now, you within higher ed are controlling most of the opportunities in that career and tech preparation, and we need to have more of a bridge and an opportunity for young people to come into these. I'm branching slightly into the other bill that hopefully we can. But it's all part of this picture of trying to address the needs of individual students and assure that if we're going to improve our graduation rate, if we're going to have people prepared for the real world, for the job market that's out there that we're all concerned about, we've got some excellent resources, but we aren't always opening the door adequately to their use and their effective use for the benefit of the children. We've made major investments, and some of this is not necessarily going to cost more. It may even save us more money if we can get out of the way and let some of the innovators really work on it. It doesn't guarantee that people will pick up on it, but I think there's a growing interest that I sense among the broader community of addressing these needs, and therefore I think that there's going to be greater incentives to look for ways of individualizing and serving all students more effectively.
Mr. Heller did ask to testify on this bill. Mr. Heller, if you'd like, and we have provided everybody with the handout that you made available, Mr. Heller, and if we are very, very, very short on time, so just a couple of minutes, please. And I don't believe we are going to get to Senate File 1781, and I'm very, very, I apologize profusely to whoever is here for Senate File 1781. Mr. Heller.
Thank you again, Chair, and members on the Higher Education Committee here at the Senate, Minnesota. As I expressed before, I'm currently unofficially representing the twice exceptional who are learners that have been provided a disability according to the Individuals with a Disability Education Act, and also are found to be gifted. And also the other group unofficially are the print disabled. This group is found in the Higher Education Opportunity after 2008. Next to the other handicapped learner group, which is the blind. And frankly, those individuals learn in this way. They frankly can't describe themselves very well. However, they can express themselves. If you look at the flyer I hand out today, it's from the IRSA flexibility request, Minnesota Department of Education. It talks about how the department was asked to change the word described to express for this reason. If you take the disc off of describe, what do you have? I appreciate the time that I'm here to express myself, just as those that have opportunity to have book on tape or screen readers. And frankly, I believe that is why the blind and print disabled are found in the Higher Education Opportunity Act. Do they not read in a normal way? However, getting back to this improvement achievement through Individual Learning Act, I've asked before, and I'll ask again. With this handout on page 285, people can find this if they have their computers on, under the flexibility waiver. Talks about universal design and for learning. I had asked, does this act include those principles, those three elements of universal design? I do see the word motivation in this act. However, I do not see the learning styles. Or do I understand, do I see the expression piece? However, in 2009, I brought this up at the legislature. The National Center of Educational Outcome is a national headquarters for removing barriers for kids that take assessments that have disabilities. They were the individuals who wanted the language in the statute, universal design, learning, and its principles. It did go all the way up to House File 2, I believe, passed the Senate, but didn't have time to pass the House. I'm a firm believer. Does this Flexibility Act transpose or parallel into post-secondary educational options? Since I'm a construction worker by trade, I always like to know what the master plan is. when it comes to education. And what it concerns me, I don't know what they're tracking or monitoring other than dropouts for metrics. Yet we do know for assessments, for instance, are they using principal universal design to get the most reliable and accurate information about what the potential of what a learner can do? Frankly, we do know that they're starting to implement these principal universal design in assessments for the MCAs, state accountability assessment. So I'm going to leave it at that. You're the leaders. I'm sure you all have the master plan. And like I said about a fiscal note, when kids obviously start taking PSCO in 9th or 10th grade, I'm a firm believer, let the individual learner know. In fact, and I believe in 2008 or 2009, it used to be age 14, but they decided to roll it back to 9th grade. And as we all know, transition is specifically more goal-orientated for the kids that have been labeled or disabled. But when will Minnesota take a very important look at the ability, not just the disc? Thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Heller. Senator Kolk moves Senate File 2201 pass, be recommended to pass and move to finance as amended.
As amended.
Thank you, Senator Kolk. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. And again, I have to apologize about Senate File 1781. We just ran out of time, and so we will have a first thing on Monday's agenda. And do you have any announcements about how we're going to be putting, how next week will go?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Yes, just real quickly, tell the members.
Okay, the plan is for us to have a few bills up on Monday afternoon in committee, and then Tuesday morning we will have an amendment that will be the omnibus policy bill that we will get to members' offices as soon as it's ready on Tuesday, and then we'll have it available to the public shortly after that, and then we'll take up that amendment in committee on Wednesday.
So, members, if you have any questions, let us know. But that is the plan for next week. Otherwise, our business being done, we are adjourned until Monday.